Paul Tanko, we have discussed over the last several times together, major issues, impeachment, climate change. But, I've been very interested in the concept of horse safety. I've had an hour-long conversation with one of the great experts on that. And I'm wondering whether or not you could tell us why you are sponsoring legislation and what it says.
Sure. It's legislation entitled the Horse Racing Integrity Act, and I've been working on it for several years with Representative Andy Barr, who's a Republican from Kentucky. And it's a bipartisan effort that we believe should be picked up by the Senate and advanced into federal reform so that this sport, the sport of horse racing, is responding to the needs, I think, of or the imagery that is out there as it relates to the sports fans. I think the fans in general, the public in general, is very discerning. And so if they see that there needs to be more integrity built into the equation, more safety for the equine athlete, so be it. The sport obviously has a major impact on our economy. I think for the state alone, for New York alone, it's some $3 billion of an annual impact. So it is essential, I think, for us, for the sake of fairness as it relates to the equine athlete and jockeys, human athletes that are involved in those who work in the industry. I think that it's an area that needs our attention. And I believe that, because we have racing in so many states, there should be a national standard that's developed in terms of integrity and the protection of the equine athlete.
So tell us what you're really troubled about here, specific trouble.
Sure. Racing horses when they ought not be raced, the kind of medications that are dispensed, when they're dispensed. I believe, again, we should have a national standard. We have some 38 different racing jurisdictions. So that means we have a patchwork of systems out there. That translates into less safety. There's not the consistency or the integrity that one would desire. So no other major sport works like this. So our bill basically responds to that crisis by setting up a national standard for drug testing, and it would ban race day medication that can hide underlying injuries rather, or health issues in the horses. I think, Santa Anita was brought to everyone's attention this past winter and spring, where they had so many deaths of the horses. And, since then, we've been gaining a lot of attention with our legislation. I think our bill now has some 137 sponsors, co-sponsors. That creates a bipartisan color to the bill. And we're hopeful to get the bill before the Energy and Commerce Committee, on which I serve. And we hope to do that sometime this fall.
I want to talk to you about trade, China. We read different things. The market reacts to our relationship with China. Is this a president who goes on his own and intuits, or is he somebody who has a strategy you consider to be effective?
Well, when you say strategy that's effective, first you would need to have a strategy to label it effective. You have one hand not knowing what the other is doing. You have tariffs being applied in some sort of haphazard way with no rhyme or reason. And you have, at the same time, efforts that you're trying to coordinate with other nations for treaties or agreements, rather, and at the same time, really causing a divide, if you will, with comments made about those nations. So there's no effort here to bring about what I think is a good and just outcome. We have been working, I have been working with a number of my colleagues in the House to make certain that these agreements are as strong as possible. Not that they're about free trade, but fair trade. And, there are provisions that have routinely haunted me. I represent a district that was hurt greatly by NAFTA. We lost many manufacturing jobs. This country's lost a lot of jobs in a way that could have been avoided if we had fairer agreements. And, you know, some of there are concerns in these agreements that are not responding as well as they should to workers, and have always seen the agreements as a global effort to reinforce and build the working class across the globe. I don't want to see an outcome where jobs are lost. That's painful enough. But to know that a job is now being done, say, in Vietnam at 78 cents per hour. I mean, that's a diminution of the middle class in whatever country. And I think these agreements can work, be done in a way that responds to the given dynamics and grows the strength of the respective country's economy and empowers their working class.
I hope, Paul Tanco, you're not going to consider me to be less of a friend than I think I am to you, because I want to ask you a question which may get you into trouble. I want to warn you about that. I've recently had a concussion, and I know that that ain't funny. I know that a lot of people who play football have concussions. You know, after all, that's what it's all about, right? So quite frequently they get banged on the head, they're out, sometimes they don't even know, it can affect them for the rest of their life. So, Paul Tanco, shouldn't football be banned?
Well, you know, we've had hearings on this, and the hearings have been very interesting before the Energy and Commerce Committee. And there are a lot of studies being done and a lot of concerns about the safety of the player. And I think what you're seeing are attempts being made to go forward with very strong restrictions to make certain that there's all sorts of follow-through and gear, protective gear, that is further developed. It's something that's drawn a lot of attention to the process in Washington and the Energy and Commerce Committee. I think it was done via the Subcommittee of Consumer Protection and Commerce. But the efforts there were to make certain that the dangerous elements that might be cited in the sport are addressed, because ultimately we want to speak to the safety, the public health and safety of those who are engaged in the sport. There are those who, you know, we haven't seen legislation yet approved. The hearing has drawn a lot of thoughts and ideas. And I think what you'll see is follow through in, the coming years, in very near future, with legislation being presented that will address further safety efforts.
Now, Paul, I know that you have been very concerned with the opioid crisis. We heard a great deal about it earlier this year. We heard a lot of people talking about how important it was that we get to the bottom of it. I'm personally hearing less about it now than I did before. Is that because things are getting better?
Well, I think it's been stabilized. We may have reached a plateau in New York and in the nation, which is good news. It tells you the work that's been done is hitting home. But there are still things we can do to improve that. And, you know, I've put together a medication assisted treatment bill for the sake of responding to the epidemic. The MAT Act, or the Mainstreaming Addiction Treatment, would eliminate a duplicative waiver that is required that currently prevents doctors and nurses who can prescribe opioids for pain relief from prescribing treatment for opioid addiction. So they can't respond to the illness of addiction, but they can respond for prescribing opioids for pain relief. I have a measure that would undo that requirement and that would allow for these already trained people to be unleashed and be able to provide for services. Why? Because one in five of those that are addicted are getting treatment on demand. And when there's that moment of clarity, when there's an opportunity to respond, we can't say there's a shortfall of clinicians. So this is a common sense approach with the Mainstreaming Addiction Treatment Act. It's one that would provide for the already trained forces out there to go to work and respond to the needs of those who struggle with the illness of addiction.
So right now, doctors can, of course, prescribe opioids, right?
Right.
And under your legislation, that would change how?
Well, there are hoops through which you jump at DEA, the Drug Enforcement Agency, that if you have the training, you have to go through this additional work and paperwork with the DEA. And I think it's, you know, it's a redundancy now. It's an outdated regulation. And this would allow people who've been serving as clinicians, as doctors and nurses, responding to pain management, pain relief. It would allow them to administer to the addicted.
But it doesn't open up the barn door?
No, I think that there's ways for safety nets. There are some who are looking at some minimum courses that would be associated with the overall bill, which we're fine with. But we just recently had that measure endorsed by the American Medical Association and a number of support groups that are there responding to the opioid crisis in the country who have voiced their support for our legislation.
Paul Tonko, always a pleasure to have you at WAMC and to share your thoughts. You're a very studious guy. You really do look at each of these in a very serious way, and we so thank you for your service.
It's my pleasure and always an honor to be on the show.